back to Jim Bohannon Show, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. James Brady, the former White House press secretary, who was severely wounded during the 1981 assassination attempt on President Reagan, died this past day at the age of 73. Correspondent Bill Plant remembers.
He was a rotund, gregarious Washington insider, known as the Bear, possessed of a sharp wit, a love of the political game, and a taste for good food and wine. But just 10 weeks after starting his dream job as Ronald Reagan's White House press secretary, Jim Brady took a bullet to the brain in the assassination attempt on the president. His wounds were so severe that staff members on the scene assumed the worst. National Security Advisor Richard Allen recorded the scene in the White House Situation Room.
We better just, I gotta go. I have a moment of prayer and silence for Jim Brady. Died.
After 9 months and many surgeries, Brady left the hospital, flashing his signature thumbs up, determined to recover. It was a rocky road.
How would you say that you're doing? How are you coming along?
I think from an ambulatory standpoint, I'm coming along fine. My cane and I can get just about anywhere.
The tragedy turned Brady's wife, Sarah, and eventually Brady himself, into advocates for gun control. They lobbied hard for a federal background check and waiting period for gun purchases. President Clinton signed the Brady Handgun Violence Protection Act into law in late 1993 with Jim Brady at his side. In the years that followed, Brady remained an invalid, but never lost his wit. We spoke in 2006.
But you still are bitter or no?
Well, it's not classy to be bitter. And I try to be classy, as you know.
I do know. Is it very much of an effort?
Yes.
It may have been an effort, but Jim Brady made that effort with courage for 33 years. Bill Plant, Washington.
We're going to be talking tonight about his passing and about the symbolism he provides for the gun control movement. I must tell you, our guest in this portion of the program is John Lott. And for those who suddenly say, what a terrible way to honor the memory of Jim Brady, the first half hour was allotted all day this past day for someone from Brady Handgun Control or some other group, but our booker was unable to get anyone to come on the program tonight. So we certainly keep Mr. Lott here to provide what is now the only perspective since the pro-handgun people chose not to provide one. I would tell you this as a just a prologue here, John Lott, who, by the way, for those of you who don't know him, he is from the Crime Prevention Research Center, online at their name, crimepreventionresearchcenter.org. And he is, of course, a noted opponent of most gun control laws. I got this from the Brady campaign to prevent gun violence, and they state that they're heartbroken over the passing of Jim Brady and talk more about his work. And then they tell you how you can help honor Jim Brady's legacy by signing their condolence card. And I'm sure that anyone who does will, of course, be getting the pitches for contributions and the like, which is their perfect right so to do. But I just note that obviously his death was going to be in the same context of advocacy as the latter part of his life. For the record, of course, acknowledged by all concerned, a tragic circumstance, and condolences to the Brady family.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know how anybody's heart can do anything but go out to the tragedy that he obviously suffered, and to the spirit with which he overcame the difficulties that were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously he felt very strongly about a cause eventually. His mind changed over time, and he did what he could to accomplish that.
How effective was his name? In other words, you've been certainly involved in the battle about guns and gun control for a long time. Once his name became associated with the effort, did that make a difference?
Well, it may have made some difference. Surely it opened doors. People, you know, if he was going to take the time to come in and bring in other people with him, they would at least open the doors for him and hear out the people that he brought with him, what they had to say. And, you know, I'm sure his story couldn't do anything but affect people. You know.
Obviously, you think of people like Jim Brady to a lesser extent, and by lesser, I mean in terms of the amount of publicity generated over time. Thinking of Gabby Giffords, who knows, over time that may have an equal impact. But let's face it, well-known people who are the victims of gun violence can make a pretty powerful emotional argument.
Right, that's true. I mean, tomorrow we have a conference going on, Students for Concealed Carry and Crime Prevention Research Center, and we have on the first panel four women who have been the victims of violent crime where they wish that they weren't disarmed, had guns to be able to go and protect themselves. And so, I mean, I think strong emotional cases can be made on both sides. One example, a woman was being stalked. The stalker ended up killing her husband. She was only about 12 feet or so away in hiding when that happened. But she had a concealed handgun permit, but at the time was not allowed to go and take it into the place where she was working because of the laws that were in effect there. I can give you other stalking cases that we're going to be talking about tomorrow, which are similar. And so, I mean... both sides have a lot of these emotional stories. I guess I'm not sure both sides get equally covered.
Well, they don't get equally covered. And, of course, part of it, let's face it, however tragic the case of those women that you mentioned, we don't know their names.
Right.
Gabby Giffords was a member of Congress, Jim Brady, presidential press secretary. Let's face it, we are a society motivated by name recognition. We elect people in part because of name recognition. It's just part and parcel of our being, especially people who, to put it bluntly, don't always pay attention to actually what's happening and to the arguments behind something. So I agree with you that certainly the story of any victim of gun violence ought to resonate, or for that matter, the victim of gun violence, let's say, who was denied access to self-protection.
Right.
That also ought to figure into the equation. But from an emotional point of view, as I say, sometimes we are not terribly rational. Sometimes we're extremely emotional about such subjects.
Right. I mean, I suppose people tell me I should have more of those types of emotional arguments than what I do. I'm probably too much to the extent just trying to look at the facts and numbers. But, I mean, surely motivates things. I mean, to me, the ultimate goal is to try to figure out what the net effect of these types of rules are.
But I think you're right. Let me put it this way. I think that the ideal balance would be certainly your approach as the core. Absolutely rational arguments based on evidence at hand. That ought to be the core. But it never hurts to illustrate the point with a few a bit of emotional tugs. I mean, as I say, you know, you're dealing with people, and people, that's what persuades a lot of people, especially the ones who only partially pay attention.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the big thing with James Brady is the legacy that he has is primarily going to be the Brady Act that's there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wish there had been a magic bullet in terms of kind of solving the crime problem. You know, one would just like to think that it would be easy to go and pass a law that would keep criminals or others from being able to go and get a hold of guns. And, you know, one can admire the tenacity that he had for fighting and still question whether or not the bill that bears his name actually accomplished what he hoped it would accomplish.
Let's just give it, for want of a better method of judging, let's give it a letter grade. The Brady bill set out to do what? And now that we've had time to assess it, what letter grade did... first of all, you can explain to me what it was that was the principal goal of the Brady bill. Then, give it a letter grade.
Right. Well, the law went into effect in 1994. The aim was, with background checks, to make sure that criminals weren't going to be able to go and get a hold of guns or other people who would be disqualified for mental illness or what have you. The problem is there have been a lot of academic studies. This has been a very well-known bill. A lot of academics wanted to go and study it, criminologists, economists. I don't know of one single study by them that found that the Brady Act reduced violent crime in any way. And, you know, it's...
Sounds like a failing grade.
Yeah. And the problem is, often the president, for example, will go and say that there are 2 million prohibited people that have been prevented from buying guns because of the background checks. And that's simply not correct. What he should say is that there have been 2 million initial denials. And the huge difference is that only about 0.1% of those who have been denied were convicted. Only about 0.3% were even prosecuted. And the reason why you have such low prosecutions isn't, you know, I have to defend Obama to some extent and others, and that is people say, well, you know, they just don't want to prosecute. That's not true. The prosecution rates and conviction rates were no higher under Bush than they were under Clinton or Obama. It's just the fact that those aren't real cases. You know, probably the best way to describe it is the late Senator Ted Kennedy. There were 5 times where he tried to fly in an airplane and he was stopped as a result of the no-fly list, that someone who they really did want to stop from flying had a name that was similar to his, what we'd call false positives. And unfortunately, that's the type of person who gets stopped as a result of the background checks. You want to have it broad enough so you can catch somebody who has a similar name to the one that you're trying to stop. But the bad guys aren't buying the guns or obtaining them that way. The good guys who are end up getting stopped from buying guns. And maybe most of the time that's just an inconvenience, but when you're talking about 2 million people, there's going to be some percentage who really need to get a gun quickly for self-defense who were prevented from doing so.
Here's a call from Ken in Great Falls, Montana. Hello, Ken.
Hello. Yeah, I got a question and then a comment, and I'll hang up and take a...
Oh, okay.
What do you... this is part of the question. Is his widow going to carry on this work, you think? Is he going to go on?
Put that up there with death and taxes as a certainty. Of course she will.
Is it going to enhance the work? Is his death, like, make a martyr out of him?
Probably. Wouldn't you think?
I think
the fundraiser I got in the email before, you know, before he was even cold, I got an email that...
Right. I don't know if the additional money is going to make that big of a difference. We already have a huge amount of money being spent on this. You have Michael Bloomberg just this year pledged to spend $50 million a year per year from now on. Gabby Giffords is raised over $20 million. You have one of the Steyer brothers is pledging about $50 million a year on this and related issues. So, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know how much they'll raise, but there's a huge amount of money already being spent on this issue.
They're certainly going to try, Ken. If they don't reach new heights, they will try. I mean, they will consider that part of his legacy. More to come. Back in a moment. Good to have you with us on the Jim Bohanna Show, 1-866-50-JIMBO. As again, our guest, John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center, one half of what we had proposed as a gun control discussion on both sides tonight following the death of Jim Brady. But the other side didn't come on. Helene in Inglewood, Florida. Hello, welcome.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. Always this is a hot topic. You know, as we address gun violence in this country, and like as you have already discussed, there's the both sides, depending upon what side of it you're on. In memory of James Brady, thinking JFK and Robert Kennedy, and how many unknown people that we just simply don't know. Should we look at the overall increased violence in our society?
Well, obviously, violence in general is a problem in our society. Care to tackle that, John?
Yeah, I mean, sure. Everybody wishes violence was zero. Fortunately, violent crime has been falling pretty consistently since 1991. Right now, the murder rate's back down to where it was in about 1960.
Can the gun control people claim any credit for that at all?
Well, I think
I mean,
so.
They,
I mean,
they the assault, will claim it. But.
Sure. Well, I mean, the assault weapons ban and ended in 2004. There was a lot of predictions that murder rates and violent crime rates were going to soar after it ended, and that didn't happen. One of the big changes that's occurred has been concealed carry. Now every state in the country allows people to carry concealed handguns. That wasn't true 25 years ago. Right now we have well over 11 million concealed carry permit holders in the United States, and that doesn't even include the six states where you don't even need a permit to be able to legally carry. And I think there's a lot of evidence that that has helped. But, you know, police, I think, are the overall most important factor for reducing crime. And we have had an increase in police. We've had an increase in prison sentence lengths. I think those are the most important factors for reducing crime. But police, when they can't be there, allowing individuals to be able to defend themselves helps.
All right. We must pause and be back in just a moment.
Hey, it's Jimmy Fallon. Here's what's happening later on The Tonight Show.
It's a very big day for us around here. Tonight is our 100th episode of... to celebrate, people sent us flowers and a big cake, which I immediately passed on to Rob Ford and Chris Christie, because we couldn't do it without those guys. That's right, we made it to 100 hours of television. 100 hours of television, or as is also known, one episode of The Today Show. And it's just like, welcome to the 12th hour of The Today Show. I don't know if this is a good idea or not. I heard about a new iPhone app that gives advice to people going through a divorce. So if you're someone who relies on an app to give you advice during difficult times, that's probably why you're getting a divorce. It's like, Siri, why is Caitlin crying? Guys, I heard that some IKEA stores are now letting customers adopt a dog while they shop. Though it's always a little weird that you also have to assemble it. Catch the Tonight Show tonight on NBC.
Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show. For the record, by the way, Sarah Brady stepped back from the official leadership of the Brady campaign a couple of years ago, and I guess even before that, they had cut way back on their active participation, right, John?
Yes, no, it's been a while. I mean, I think she's still titular chairman of the Brady campaign, but...
It's very titular. In other
right.
Words, yeah, others run the show. Sharon in Crane, Missouri, hello.
Hello, Jim. Mr. Locke, I want to tell you, sir, this is a great honor for me to speak to you.
Oh, thank you.
You may not realize it, but you are one of the, I think, unsung heroes of the fight to keep the Second Amendment. And I appreciate greatly the work you do.
Well, you should thank people like Jim for having me on his show.
Oh, Jim knows how much I take of him.
Thank you.
Sir, the Heller-Palmer-McDonald decisions, do you think that the judicial system is finally starting to come down on the side of Americans' rights to carry, to defend themselves?
Well, yeah, she's referring to a case that we just had a little bit over a week ago here in Washington, D.C., which struck down D.C.'s ban on concealed carry. It only struck it down for about 3 days, though, but all the kind of horror stories that were supposed to happen obviously didn't happen, but it wasn't much of a test. The thing is, it's a long battle still. That was just district court. It's going to go to appeals court where you have about a 2-to-1 Democratic-Republican margin there. And these judges on the gun issue pretty much go according to what their party registration is. And then it'll go to the Supreme Court probably. The thing is, though, you have a very closely divided Supreme Court. By the end of the Obama administration, two of the Republicans there, Scalia and Kennedy, are going to be over 80 years of age. And if one of them dies and is replaced by someone like Obama's already put on the Supreme Court in terms of Kagan or Sotomayor, basically they're on record saying that they don't believe that there's an individual right to self-defense or an individual right, especially to use a gun for self-defense. And just one change like that, if one of those guys dies or retires, will completely change things. And my guess is that Democratic Supreme Court would reverse the very cases that you just referred to.
We will wrap on that note with thanks again to John Lott, our guest. And again, he's with CrimePreventionResearchCenter.org. And you have that special conference that's taking place tomorrow involving students. Again, you can go to the website and learn more about that. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.